on generation and corruption. We've got reels of the stuff, miles of it, in boxes in the barn, but this should give you an idea, at least, of what it was like, Robert Blakely says, unrolling a length of clear plastic tube, no thicker than a branch of ivy, from a large wooden spindle. We're in the basement of his home, Blakely House, an old Georgian manor in the Cornish countryside. He spools a good few metres of it onto his arm and sets off to the other side of the room, around the drained and mildewed swimming pool. God knows where he got it from, how he paid for it, but we didn't concern ourselves with questions like that at the time. You know what the early 70s were like. He stops, turns back to me, and squints. Though maybe you're too young to remember. When he reaches the far end of the room, he stops, pulls a small box from his pocket, and attaches it to the tube. All right, if you get the lights, I'll fire it up. I find the switch, flick it, and the room vanishes into a thick, soupy black. There are no windows in the basement, no skylights. The darkness is total. Here we go, he says. A few seconds pass, punctuated only with the sounds of his fumbling. For a brief moment, I see Blakely bathed in a deep golden light, seemingly emitted from the box. Then the light, a small ball of it, almost lazily, begins its journey along the tube. It reaches my end of the swimming pool in just a little under 10 seconds. Okay, he says after a while. You can get the lights now. When the fluorescent tubes flicker on again, I try hard not to reveal my disappointment. I contacted Blakely House after attending a series of lectures on the activities of Kingsley Hall, R.D. Lang's experimental psychiatric treatment centre that operated in the East End of London in the second half of the 60s. Several of the speakers, former researchers, nurses and patients, made reference to how Blakely had opened his manor to displacees from the project after it was wound up in 1970. Two of them, one psychiatrist, one patient, who had both made the move to Cornwall, referred, almost as an aside, to an art show that had taken place here in 1973, and to a specific work in particular. The patient, for her part, said it was known as All Made of Stars, whereas the doctor knew it as On Generation and Corruption, but it was clear that both were referring to the same installation. What piqued my curiosity, I suppose, was the apparent irrelevance of the artwork to the broader context of their lectures. Why mention it at all unless something compelled them to do so? I was unable to speak with either of them after the lectures, so made the decision to contact Blakely directly. He's in his early 60s and looks much like you'd expect a middle-aged owner of a manor and working dairy farm to. Ruddy-faced, bearded and Wellington-booted, the archetype of the gentleman farmer. And yet the stories of what happened at Blakely House during the early 70s, many of them no doubt apocryphal, are well known and well scoffed at in British psychiatric circles. It sounds like an awful cliché now, he says, back on my side of the swimming pool. A rich young blue blood inherits a family homestead and turns it into a colony for countercultural refugees. Artists, schizophrenics, fiends. He smiles. Most of the time it was just as awful as you would imagine, but we did have some interesting people pass through. We started a few months before Lang's place closed, but we welcomed his people here with open arms. I like to consider myself a yes-sayer. Can we dig up the lawns for a vegetable and marijuana patch? Sure. Can we try and stage a British Woodstock? Hell, be my guest. After a while, people stopped asking. It was anarchic, for good and ill. There's something you want to do? Well, then do it. That's how the art show came about. I don't know whose idea it was to begin with, and most of it, you understand, was total trash. Psychedelic colours, tie-dye motifs, representations of dream images by people whose dreams were, I'm sorry to say, probably not that interesting to begin with. But Adrian's piece, he says, sitting down on the spindle. On Generation and Corruption, he called it, after Aristotle, apparently. That caught people's attention. The Adrian he speaks of, one Adrian George Riley, had not been long at Blakely House before plans for the art show were announced. He had obtained a physics PhD from Imperial College before entering, then abruptly leaving, the seminary. He had been living rough for several months on the Cornish moors before arriving, almost by chance, at Blakely House, and integrating the commune. Robert remembers him fondly. He was a lot less full of horse shit than most of the others, dressed more like a boy scout than a hippie and preferred to live under his own tarp than in the teepees that some of the others had built. He wasn't an outcast. He was well-liked because he was calm and kind, but he was held in a certain suspicion owing to the fact that he refused to get high. What were the drugs of choice? I ask. Well, it started off, as you might expect, with just marijuana, mushrooms and a little LSD when people came back from the city. But later on, heroin crept in, and that made things a little unpleasant for a while, fractured the ambience somewhat. The art show was meant, in fact, as a way of reuniting the colony, of bringing everyone back together. But it didn't happen quite like that. I ask him to describe On Generation and Corruption, how it was conceived, what exactly it was. I'm not the best person to ask. The first I heard of it was when a couple of people, girls, both of them, came to speak with me on Adrian's behalf to ask if they could dig up the basement. What could I say? Why not? Go right ahead. I'm not using it. I even joked that when they were done, we could convert it into a swimming pool. It took me 20 years to make good on that idea, he says with a smile. It strikes me, suddenly, that there is something very odd about the pool. A perfect square, perfect 5-meter cube, in fact, dug in the very centre of the room. I could have filled it in, I suppose, or given it a shallow end, lengthened it, I don't know. But I suppose I always held out hope that one day someone might want to recreate the work. Although you're the first person who ever came down here asking about it. The installation, as Blakely describes it, involved hundreds, maybe thousands of these light tubes, crossing from one of the pit's 5 faces to another, or sometimes doubling back on themselves. Imagine, he says, looking down into a newly opened crypt, in which, for thousands of years, the only activity had been the work of an immortal spider, endlessly spinning its web. Each length of tubing, he explains, was engineered for the globule of light to pass down it at different speeds, some travelling quickly, others more sluggishly. As soon as the light reached the end of its journey, a new globule was set loose. I don't know where they got the tubes, but the lights and their timers must have come from a contact of Adrian's at Imperial. Anyway, when he unveiled it, the response of most of the residents was pure indifference. Understandably, really. At first it was just a mess of random lights, nothing to get excited about. At first, I ask. Look, he says, eyeing my recorder. With what I'm about to tell you, there's a real risk that I'm going to sound ridiculous. He pauses. You've heard of Emile Borel's infinite monkey theorem. Give enough monkeys, enough typewriters, and enough time, and they'll write the complete works of Shakespeare, I interrupt. Well, yes, that and everything else. I always thought that must have been what Adrian had in mind, although I never asked him outright. The show ran for a couple of weeks until everyone got bored of the idea and moved on to other things. But we left Adrian's work running, 24/7, these thousands of balls of light bouncing back and forth in this hole. I can't really say why. It was probably a month or two after Adrian switched it on, when one of the residents, Daisy, woke us up at night. She was a quiet girl, not really a user. She'd been unable to sleep, she said, and had gone to the basement to watch the lights, to help her relax. It was then that she saw it. It, I press him. The butterfly. From out of nowhere, she said, the silhouette of a butterfly formed out of the lights, flapped its wings a few times, then disappeared. It lasted barely a second, she said, but she had no doubt what she'd seen. Word spread quickly. I think the idea appealed to a lot of people here for very different reasons. Over the next few days, more and more of the residents installed themselves here in the basement, hoping to see what Daisy had seen. Or something else. There was a fervour, a desperation for something like that to happen again. And did it? This is where you have to be careful. You have to understand how fragile some of the residents were. Who knows if their determination to see something made them hallucinate? The lights could be quite hypnotic too, as it happens. I never saw anything, and I spent as much time down here as anyone. I suppose, in a way, I was just as hungry for it as all the others. Hungry for this mess of light or energy to mean something. Still, though, the story started to circulate. Of people seeing animals, monstrous new species, collapsing stars, the birth of worlds, striding colossi, visions of the past, of the future. I don't think even Adrian understood what he had started, how the box belonged to Pandora more than it belonged to him. You can't promise damaged people hope like that. It's not fair. Hope like what? Blakely ignores my question. It was Adrian that took the decision to take it down, to draw a line. He saw better than anyone the danger of his work. I still remember, though, the glimmer of satisfaction in his eyes when he explained to me why it had to end, why I had to help him tear it apart. What happened to Adrian? I ask. Blakely has started re-spooling the plastic tube. I hope you don't mind, he says, cold suddenly, but I think we'll leave it there.